How many times while you have been manscaping have you nicked or nearly trimmed off your wiener schnitzel in the twins? Hey, I'm Christy, and with 30 years experience teaching men how to thin out their forest in their yonder region, I am so excited to tell you about this revolutionary lawn mower 3.0. The ceramic blades prevent the manscaping accidents that leave you unable to use your most favorite appendage. Oh, and gentlemen, it also keeps a 90-minute charge for those of you that haven't trimmed in quite a while. You'll need every second of that 90 minutes. Let's be real, though. No one, especially your significant other, wants to have to weed through your overgrown forest to find their favorite play toy. So order now at manscaped.com and enter the promo code podcast20 and receive 20% off plus free shipping. Serious, bushy man. Order now.
Welcome to the Sports Talk Garage Podcast, where we discuss and debate the latest news and hot takes from the court and the ball fields to the locker room and front office. We are four lifelong friends who grew up with a love of professional and collegiate sports. Today we are bankers, investors, professors, and entrepreneurs, but our love of sports has never changed. Come listen for the fun, gain some insight, and probably a few laughs as we give you our perspective on those oversized contracts, game-winning scores, and franchise players. This is the Sports Talk Garage.
Right, welcome back to another episode of the Sports Talk Garage Podcast. We are here in Season 2, Episode 36. This is David, joined by my co-hosts John and Matt. Happy to be back with you this week. Hope everyone out there is staying safe, staying healthy, staying sane as we're all locked inside right now. But we're here to continue on with some more sports talk and have another guest with us this week. We're happy to join, or happy to have with us joining tonight, Ethan Skolnick, CEO of Five Reasons Sports Network out of Miami. Ethan, thank you.
Yeah, good to be on with you guys.
Happy you've been able to take the time for that. Just before we really could get into things, can you just kind of tell us, you know, what you do with Five Reasons Sports and what that is?
Yeah, it's evolved a little bit. It's, you know, it started out with one podcast, which was mine. After I started that March of 2018, and then we kind of, you know, got a little bit of a following in the community. I used to do it with my former radio co-host, so people were familiar with us. And once that got started, you know, I've always been very active on social media. And so some folks reached out to me on Twitter, essentially saying that, you know, they wanted to start their own pod and maybe we should link up. And it just kind of went from there. You know, at one point we had as many as 15 podcasts in the network. Now we probably have 7 that are active, 3 or 4 that we really push, but it's kind of become a more of a sports network now, not just a podcast network. So
okay.
We kind of look at it like we're the voice of the fan down here. I worked for all the traditional media outlets in newspapers. I hosted Afternoon Drive. I was a sports columnist. I think a lot of that is either dead or dying. and so, you know, kind of the way I look at it is we have fanalists. It's not just, you know, journalists that are supposed to maintain total objectivity behind a wall. It's people are really engaged in this stuff and would do it for free. And so now we have a full service website with columns and breaking news stories and merchandise and our podcasts. We have a YouTube channel now. We do streaming shows. We just did 10 hours of streaming on the NFL draft with the Dolphins. So it's not just podcasts, but my podcast, Five on the Floor, is one of the two kind of centerpiece podcasts. You know, we cover the Heat and the NBA down here.
Yeah, that's awesome to see how it's grown and just the trajectory from starting out just one to kind of blowing up in South Florida. So just kind of piggyback off of what you said there, you know, you've done a lot of writing for CBS Sports, you know, a lot of the newspapers in South Florida, co-authored 2 books, you know, was a professor for a little while for journalism. Is sports media something you have always wanted to work in, or did that passion just kind of come on later in life for some reason?
No, I mean, I always pursued it. You know, I was a, you know, going back to high school sports editor, and I played baseball, you know, for a while until I wasn't quite good enough, and among other sports. But, you know, basically you realize that's not going to be your calling. And so I was always in sports media. You know, after I went to journalism school at Columbia, New York, I ended up in L.A., internship with the Times back in Baltimore, and then came down back home to the Palm Beach Post. And I was actually a Dolphins, Miami Dolphins beat writer when I was 24. So it kind of started there. And, you know, since then it's just been Dolphins or Heat primarily. I mean, I've covered everything else. But the everything else hasn't been so great the past 20 years. I did cover the Marlins 97 run, more so their 2003 run to the World Series. I have covered, you know, the Panthers all the way back to their 96 run, but there haven't been a lot of playoff appearances. The Hurricanes some, but they've tailed off. So it's great. And, you know, with honestly, reality is with the Dolphins, there haven't been many playoff appearances either. The last playoff win is 2000.
Yeah.
I was at that one. But, you know, pretty much, you know, I turned my attention mostly to the Heat. And, you know, and then I went to Heat full time in 2010 when LeBron came. I kind of took over the columnist role. I went back to the Palm Beach Post to cover the Big Three, and I did that for all 4 years. So I was with them home and road, you know, and that was probably the most interesting, challenging period, you know, to cover that team for 4 years.
Sure, sure. You had lots of good stories from that time as well.
A few I tell and a few I don't. So it's a little bit of both.
Probably safe that way.
So this is John. First off, I just want to, you mentioned merchandise earlier. I was going through your site, you know, again the other day. You guys have some incredible t-shirts out there, just like catchy stuff that, you know, if you're a Florida sports fan, you know, I strongly suggest you check out Ethan's website because there's some pretty amazing stuff down there. So little props for that. It's a great job.
No design talent, so it's not me. I have a guy who's a genius. He's a quirky genius, but I basically text him and say, we need a Tua shirt. Okay, give me an hour. And that's kind of the way it works. So, awesome. Yeah, we've sold almost 200. We had one Tua shirt that was selling, and I was a little nervous because of COVID, a lot of the stuff hasn't gotten out as quickly as it should. And so people ordered the Tua shirts. And I kept telling him it's getting a little too close for the draft. And then there was all this smoke about, you know, all Herbert and everybody else. And I thought they were taking Tua, and I kept saying it. So I was concerned what was going to happen was, you know, they were going to take Justin Herbert or take an offensive tackle at 5, and then everybody's going to want their money back by the time the shirts came. So we were relieved, and then we basically put out 3 new shirts. So we've sold a little over 200 shirts since Thursday night. So actually that's – If I get a buzz while I'm talking to you, it's my email going off. It means we sold another shirt. So
that's funny.
That's worked out okay.
Right. Hey, somebody hook us up with that buzz noise, would they?
Yeah, exactly. I never thought I was going into the merchandising business, but it is kind of tied into to what we're doing. We want to kind of take social media in a way that I don't think the radio stations and the newspapers have done. I mean, we host watch parties when there used to actually be sports to watch. We used to host watch parties, and I never did that when I was a radio host or a newspaper writer. There's always this wall between you and the quote unquote readers, listeners, fans, whatever. I don't believe in that wall. I mean, I think everybody can analyze. Everybody can watch tape these days. Just because somebody went to journalism school like I did doesn't mean they're any smarter or better than anybody else who's out there. And so that's kind of our model. And so we want to take the stuff that is trending and go with it. And, you know, we call it Tankavaloa for Tua, because that's what the Dolphins were doing all year. And so that we created a t-shirt, and it, you know, it's our biggest seller, bigger than all the Heat shirts combined. So
is it a tank top?
What's that?
Is it a tank top?
Yeah. Yes, actually, it is. No, that was the now we have it. No, it's funny. You used to work for us. It's funny because that was the only shirt we had in tank top for a while. We've since added a bunch of tanks, but that was that's what we called it. It was the tank top. In fact, we didn't have a regular shirt for a while, and then we added the regular one. Now we've added some tanks. But yes, it was a tank top, and so now we're taking other slogans. Our new one is, you know. Fat Tua's Day is the one that started.
Oh, that's great.
And then, you know, a little bit of a playoff bar stool, which I hope I don't get sued. Because they did that, Saturdays, Sundays with the boys. It's Tua's Day is for the boys, and now we did a Tua's Day is for the girls shirt. So that's kind of the direction we took it.
Nice. Love it. you kind of talked about your past. I mean, if our math is right, which it means not any of our strong suits, so bear with us, but you've combined for like 30 combination 30 Super Bowl, NBA Stanley Cup Finals, World Series, NBA and MLB All-Star games, I mean, you pretty much hit every bucket list of every listener is going to listen to this times 30, probably for most cases. So it's safe to see you've seen some of the biggest games and stars, you know, really in the world of American sports. Two questions. Who would be your most underrated athlete that you've covered and why? And then of all the ones you've covered, maybe on those road trips, things like that, who's the most personal one? You know, the guy that kind of hang around the gym or whatever after the fact and just kind of shoot it, you know, with the media and talk, you know, frank with them and, you know, come down to a human level.
Is it Shane? Because you can say Shane.
Well, I love Shane. I do love Shane, and Shane's great. I'm not going to pick him. I will say, I'll answer the second question first. You know, I've covered a lot of different teams, but the team that kind of defines what I've done was the Big Three Heat, and it was a really unique team to cover because they were so misunderstood. I mean, I've covered some teams that I didn't like personally. I mean, not the whole team, but certain guys. I liked every guy on that team. I just think, you know, there was this us against the world thing, which never made any sense. I understand LeBron's decision, but it never made sense because all those guys individually were terrific. Got people to deal with, and it was the smartest room I've ever covered. Not even close. I mean, you had Ray Allen, you had James Jones, LeBron is a walking encyclopedia. You had the guy I'm going to mention to answer your question is Chris Bosh, by the way. You had Shane. UD is. I have a real, real soft spot for Udonis Haslem. He's been very, very good to me over the years. He's just total class. And there were a lot of guys on that team, and I have a very close relationship with Dwayne, which, you know, went through its ups and downs because I covered his, you know, from his first summer league game to his retirement game. I was there pretty much at every game. So you know, I've had many, many conversations with those guys in off-the-record situations. Very personal conversations. I knew a lot more that was going on than everybody said. And I had a pretty, you know, really good relationship with LeBron too. And kind of understood him in a way that I think other people didn't. I was the guy who, when LeBron, just to tell a couple stories on who he is, really is, in 2014, I was waiting for my daughter to be born. My first child and only child. I was waiting for her to be born, and I had a contract with Bleacher Report at the time where I had signed a 2-year deal with them to basically cover LeBron because they knew I had a relationship with LeBron. But I put in there that I wanted to be Miami-based because I did not want to be in Cleveland. I had a bad feeling about 2014 and what was going to happen. And so I put that in there. And, of course, you know, on the 11th of July, and he announces or they announce, you know, goes out there. And I kind of knew. You know, his teammates were telling me he was leaving Miami. And so with the Heat, but the Heat brass was telling me he wasn't, which is why I didn't report it, because they were convinced he was staying. And so basically, you know, he goes to Cleveland, and 6 days later, my daughter's born. And on the day that my daughter's born, he sends me a DM telling me he'll find me some restaurants in Cleveland. And 2 days later, there was a monogram towel for my daughter that showed up in my house. So, I mean, that's
cool.
That's kind of who he really is. You know, I haven't spent as much time around him the past couple of years, but you know, that was kind of my experience. Chris Bosh is just one of the most genuine, intelligent, eclectic people I've ever covered. I love that dude. I just think he's terrific. You know, and again, I have enormous respect for Dwayne because I remember when Dwayne came in, being in a locker room with him pretty much alone in Denver in the 2005 All-Star game, which was also LeBron's first All-Star game. I didn't know LeBron at the time, but I was getting to know Dwayne, and everybody was with LeBron. So I'm just sitting there with one other reporter I'm friends with Dwayne in the locker room before the All-Star game when you used to be able to do that, sitting there for like 20 minutes and walking out and telling my buddy Chris Perkins, I don't have anything to say to him. There's just nothing there. You know, it's just, and now to see where he was then, you know, to where he is now, you know, the stances he takes on social issues, he's a mafia, all the businesses he's running and just who he's become, to do that from beginning of career to end was really remarkable. There's a lot of football players that I've developed relationships with. Jason Taylor, Zach Thomas, in particular. Zach's one of my all-time favorites. But that team was unique. And I don't think there'll ever be a team like it that has that kind of pressure. And they didn't do what they promised. They didn't win 12 championships, but they did pretty damn well. And most of my real memories come from those 4 years.
That's awesome.
That's fair. Okay, so, you know, with the NFL draft that just happened, you know, I guess it'd probably be dumb not to ask with how many people you've had a chance to talk to. What are your thoughts about the draft, and is there a grade that you're willing to give them after this with the Dolphins?
I give them an A. I don't know how you can give them anything else. I saw Chad Ford gave him an F today, and I'm trying to figure out what he's looking at. I got Chad Ford, Chad Forbes. Chad Ford was the guy who used to cover the NBA. I don't know how you could criticize it, honestly. And I have been a huge Dolphins critic for 20 years. But to me, like, they had a plan, and the plan was we're going to collect assets, get rid of the guys that don't really want to be here anyway, but we're also going to try to win some games to establish some credibility in our new coach. Okay, so they did all of that. They get to the draft. They used a bunch of, you know, gullible reporters to make it seem like they weren't going to take Tua, who was the target all along. They didn't end up having to give up an asset to get him. To me, he's the transcendent prospect in this draft and would have been number one overall if he hadn't gotten hurt. They got him in a year that may not even happen. So, and it may happen late, and they don't need to rush him anyway because they've got Fitzpatrick as a bridge quarterback. So to me, it's the perfect selection. I mean, people are – he's personable. He's on social media. The Dolphins have not had a face in 20 years. I mean, since Dan declined and left, they've had Jason and Zach, and they got dwarfed by Dwayne and Shaq and LeBron. So they've been like – everyone talks about this being a football town. It hasn't been a football town in more than a decade. But it's a latent football town. There is, and this is the guy who can ignite that. So not only did they do that, but then they went out and they added all this beef on both lines, which is what they needed to do for years, and they're going to let these guys compete. They signed a bunch of free agents other than Byron Jones. They were all pretty cheap, and Byron Jones plays a premium position. I don't know how you don't like their draft. And they have, I think, four more picks than they should next year, including, I think, an extra first and an extra third. So I don't. To me, it's an A. I mean, now are all the players going to be great? Probably not. But you've taken enough at the right positions that you've given this transcendent talent a chance to get well and to succeed. And the Dolphins have needed that forever. So, I mean, like I said, I've been killing them and propping up the Heat for 20 years, but I love what they did. I think that this is the first time that they have a coach, and I like Brian Flores a lot, and that they have a plan.
So do you think this is something based on Tua's injury, they're going to put Fitzmagic in place for the year and kind of give Tua some backup play as he's growing into the system?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, we don't know when the season's going to happen. I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, you know, are they even going to start on time? You know, I mean, everything is colored by that right now. I mean, you have to have in football. You can't just rush into it. They're going to have a full training camp of 4 to 6 weeks, right? So
you would hope.
Right. So, I mean, you're going to start October, maybe. I mean, he has even more time to heal. But with that being said, like, I don't know what the rush is. Like, Fitzpatrick was very good the second half of last season. Let's be honest. He was better than Tom Brady the second half of last season. It wasn't close. Look at the numbers. He was playing on a team where he was the leading rusher. He led the team in rushing with 230 yards. So, they literally were taking away. It's kind of like the movie Major League. Like, they were literally taking away someone every week from him. And they finished 5-4 and finished the season with a win in New England in a game the Patriots were trying to win for a bye in the first round. So to me, Fitzpatrick should be able to have this season. I think maybe you get to a little work to get comfortable, but I mean, Dolphin fans will get impatient. They're going to want to see him. But I will say for right now, I polled this at Five Reasons Sports, and like we got over 4,000 votes, and 92% of people said they were okay with Tua redshirting.
Smart.
Now, what? Yeah, I mean, when it actually happens, that'll change. But I do think at least enough people are starting with the right perspective that it makes sense. And I don't know what they're going to do with Josh Rosen, and I could see a scenario where Rosen plays if Fitzpatrick gets hurt. You know, I mean, and they try to build value for Rosen so that they can at least get a fourth-round pick back for him. And Tua still sits out the rest of the season. So I think they put themselves in a position where they can do this right. And they know they don't have to rush this process because the fans have bought into the coach. So I don't think – you don't have the issues where it was Joe Philbin or Adam Gase or Cam Cameron, like coaches that everybody knew were nincompoops down here. Like people believe in this coach. I think they're going to trust him now. And honestly, I think with what he did last season with one of the worst rosters I've ever seen to win 5 games and 5 of his last 9, I think he's earned it.
So basically gives Tua a chance to be John's favorite guy, Aaron Rodgers, for a few years and kind of pick up from there. John, are you over there grimacing right now?
Yeah, I mean,
you're getting middle finger, I think.
I don't think it's going to be that long. I mean, it's not going to. There's no far view, right? I mean, just like for Jordan Love, like this is an interesting debate. Like of the quarterbacks that got drafted, okay, Herbert's going to play quickly, mm-hmm. okay, and Burrow's going to play quickly. But if you look at the others, who's going to play first? Is it going to be Hurts behind Wentz? Probably only if Wentz gets hurt, right? Is it going to be Tua? Is it going to be Love? Not unless Rodgers gets hurt, right? So I think Tua's probably going to play before Love does, I would think, unless Rodgers gets hurt. But I just – and, you know, Wentz will get hurt, so Hurts mm-hmm. is probably going to play.
Yeah.
But I think they've perfectly positioned themselves. I mean, I actually think Jake Fromm could play at some point before some of those guys, because Josh Allen, I still don't believe in Josh Allen, but I mean, we'll see. But he's such a total different fit for that system. I don't really know. But I just think that the Tua thing, you know, again, it created buzz in South Florida in a way that really nothing the Dolphins have done in 20 years has. Probably since the Ricky Williams trade, so which was 2002. So, I mean, you're talking about almost 20 years.
True. Okay, so real quick, just since we talked about, you know, if we're going to have a season this year, let's just give us all the benefit of the doubt and say we have the full 16-game season. What's your projection?
Well, they were 5-11 last year with what I said was one of the worst rosters in NFL history. The roster is considerably better. With that being said, it's also considerably younger. And so, you know, and the offensive line is going to struggle because they're probably only throwing one vet out there. I mean, they're probably going to have one or two vets and at least, you know, 3 rookies. So, I mean, that's going to be a challenge. I think they're going to struggle to rush the passer at times. Fitzpatrick will keep them competitive. If Rosen is the guy who goes in, there's enough there with Josh that I could see them winning 6. Maybe. I don't think, you know, the division is not great also. The Patriots are not going to be great. You can't lose that many people. I don't care what kind of wizard Belichick is. And they still don't have a quarterback. And I don't think the Jets are going to be very good. I don't believe in Gase at all. I could go on and on and on about that. And I like the Bills, but I don't trust the Bills. I think their talent is the best in the division, but I don't know. I mean, I think that there's always something. They always fall back after they take a step forward, and I'm not totally confident that Josh Allen is the guy, to be honest. So, I mean, I think the Dolphins could win 8 if everything broke right, because I do think they're going to be really well coached, but I would say 6-10 is most likely.
Fair enough. Okay, so let's go ahead and drop the L flag, take a quick break, let our sponsors have a word, and then we'll be right back with a little more time with our host, Ethan Skolnick.
Right, welcome back to season 2, episode 36. We are on with Ethan Skolnick from Five Reasons Sports Network down in the South Florida, Miami area. Just kind of cover some of Ethan's past. So we're going to move into really what Five Sports Network does, which is starting out with podcasts and has since evolved into more media full service sports coverage for the South Florida teams. So Ethan, with those podcasts, you have a pretty talented lineup of hosts and contributors. I've noticed play-by-play broadcasters. You have some former athletes, some writers, professors, radio show hosts. So did you reach out to some of them? Did they reach out to you and they found out what was going on? Or kind of how did all that come together with the host?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it was reaching out, you know, just people I've known in the industry. We've kind of evolved, though, since the beginning, where, you know, we had more of my peers, kind of professionals that, you know, came up traditional way that were, like you said, play-by-play hosts, radio show people, newspaper people. A lot of those folks, well, not a lot of them, some of them have kind of moved on. And what we've done is I reshaped this so it's more, like I said, kind of a fanalist concept, you know, where we do have some professionals and kind of the thing we're trying to do is take these people who have built their own audiences. Like one example is a guy named Chris Kaufman, who goes by CK Parrot on Twitter. He manages like $1 billion. I mean, he's a financial advisor in Tampa, but he's also like a guy who has made a reputation over the past 15 years on the Dolphins message boards back when that was a thing. You know, as just being the guy like who studies tape of like a guard from Appalachian State that the Dolphins might look at. He does this as a hobby, and he built up 15,000 Twitter followers before he ever got to me. And he's one of the three members of 3 Yards Per Carry. One of the other guys did work for BBC in London. I mean, he's still in London, Simon Clancy. I actually found out about him because he used to send stuff to Dave Hyde, my colleague at the Sun Sentinel, as just to his blog. But he has a relationship with Aaron Rodgers and with Tua somehow. And he knows all the scouts for the Dolphins. And they've nailed, like, all the draft picks the last 3 years. These two guys and a guy in Miami Lakes. So they're not what you would call traditional South Florida people, but they are respected on the Dolphins. And that's kind of what I've been trying to do is take these people who have built their own audiences a little bit and give them a bigger platform and then connect them with others like them. And so we've done it in Miami, and all of their follower numbers have gone up because we have a rule that we retweet each other's stuff and we have internal DM strings on Twitter to kind of communicate with each other. Otherwise I'd kill them with all the texts. And so basically we do that on Twitter and, you know, we've basically built the whole thing on Twitter. I mean, I have, you know, about 70,000 followers in my personal account, which is verified, but Twitter stopped verifying 3 years ago. So when I started the Five Reasons account, I basically built it from scratch. We're up to 18,000 now, but I built it by retweeting from my personal account with the 70,000 followers, pretty much everything I put on Five Reasons and putting polls up and three a day, four a day, and then retweeting our other stuff and just creating content. And I think that's the way you're going to have to do things these days. You know, one of the things, I mean, COVID is awful, obviously, and I don't want to diminish it in any way. And certainly we weren't rooting for something like that to interrupt sports. But I will say that actually, in the long run, it's kind of accelerating what I thought was going to happen with us anyway, which is the traditional outlets have buildings they have to pay for, have employees that they have to, you know, pay salary. We don't. I have no overhead. I just have people who want to contribute. And they would do this anyway. That's the thing. They would do it for free. They were on social media. They just want to get their voices heard. So I'm just giving them platforms. And then we're trying to create economic opportunity through sponsorships. And I think that's the model. It's a much more kind of lean startup, guerrilla marketing. So once we win Miami, which I do think we're going to do, because I do think that all the traditional outlets are going to contract even more. Once you start not covering things, you don't start covering them again. So I think a lot of these traditional outlets are not going to travel with teams on the road. They're not going to find it's not worth it. I don't even know when teams are going to be on the road anymore, you know, for a while. And so I think we're going to come out of this in good position. And I think once we win Miami, then I want to take the same concept to Tampa. I've already had discussions with people in Atlanta, and I want to find the people like my guy, Chris Kaufman, in those places, because there is a guy in every market covering a team that is respected, even though he doesn't work for the newspaper. And I want to find that person, or I want to appoint someone in those cities to find those people. And that's kind of what the model is going forward.
Yeah, I really like that. You know, the people who are paid to do this for a living, I mean, that's their job, right? The people who have professions in other areas who do this just for fun because it's a passion of theirs, I mean, they're all in, which I love. And I love that concept.
Yeah, that's the whole idea, is that I want the people who would, I don't want these people to do it for free because I want to make sure they get compensated, but sure. I want the people who would do it for free.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's, you know, and that's kind of what we found. And, you know, I think what's happened is technology has made it that everybody's equal. And, but if you can take those people and then give them a bigger platform or give them opportunities, like for instance, the last 2 years, because I have connections to the NBA, because I covered it for years, we got Five Reasons, got 3 credentials to the All-Star game each of the last 2 years. So I brought 2 different guys each of the past 2 years in their early 20s who didn't come up the traditional journalism route, but I got them credentials. So this is taking, you know, the fanalists and then giving them legitimacy.
That's pretty cool.
And I think, and then this year, you know, I was stunned by this. The NFL gave us 3 to the Super Bowl. And I, you know, I thought maybe I would get it because I had covered 9 Super Bowls, but I hadn't covered one in a few years. So I wasn't sure about me, but then they gave us 3 in the press box, which again, that stunned me too. So I do think, you know, that, you know, and so here I have Chris Kaufman, who again is a financial advisor in Tampa, and he's sitting next to me covering a Super Bowl, no traditional route, no nothing. So I think that's the concept, and I do think we can take it to other markets. And again, it doesn't cost me anything to do that.
So with how much ESPN is contracted, you know, over a couple, what was it, 2 years ago, Disney took over and they cut off so much of their force and personnel. With what we're seeing with coronavirus, do you really think that, I guess, sports journalism is going to change in a huge way?
Yes, I do. I think, like I said, I think it was already happening. I was talking to a buddy of mine who works at Spotify in their sports area. And what he basically said to me last night, he says, what's happening was going to happen anyway. It's just that what was going to happen in 10 years is now going to happen in 2 or 3. And I think on a much larger scale, I mean, the reason that the NBA needs to play this season is because of TV. It's not because of anything else. It's because essentially what's happening is their partners, ESPN in particular, ESPN ABC, like ESPN is part of all these cable packages, is part of all these, you know, Hulu, you know, ESPN Plus, you know, Disney Plus, etc. They need to put content on there. And if they don't, then the NBA is going to get a lot less money. And then there's going to be a lot less money going back to the players and a lot less money going back to the owners. And so there is going to be a push to play. So I think, but with that being said, like the local outlets, the newspapers and particularly sports talk radio, but they don't travel as much anyway, but mostly the newspapers. I mean, local sports TV has been, you know, struggling for a long time, particularly in smaller markets. But the newspapers, like, I will tell you, when I was in, you know, when I worked at the Palm Beach Post in the late 90s, Sun Sentinel, I was a columnist for pretty much the entire 2000s, okay, 2000 to 2010, we had 20-something sports writers full-time, right at each of the 3 places. There were more than 55 sports writers in South Florida at one point. There are now, I counted it yesterday, there are 14.
Jeez.
So some of them at the Sun Sentinel just got furloughed. So I just think what's going to happen, and I don't like to see it because I'm a newspaper person, but I was with my daughter yesterday and she asked me what a newspaper was. She's 5 and a half. she'd never seen one. I think what's going to happen is that, you know, these news, when they take something away, like I said, they don't bring it back. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it never made sense. Sports is expensive to cover. Local news is not. Sports is expensive. You got to send writers on the road. You got to compete for the best writers. It's expensive, okay? And I don't see most of these papers. The New York Times just shut down its Sunday sports section, okay? They just shut it down. And it's not coming back. I don't see a lot of these places bring it back. So I don't think, like, for instance, like the guy who covers the Miami Heat at Sun Sentinel has been there for 30 years. I'm not so sure that when this is over, when the Heat go back on the road, that they're going to send him anymore. And I'm not rooting for that, but I just think that's what we're looking at. I think they're going to cite liability risk, but I also think they're going to just say, is this worth the money or can we just pick it up and have somebody do this from their couch? And so my thing is I already have people doing it from their couches. And that's so I think that's where this is heading. Unfortunately, But like I said, I think for us, it gives us more of a level playing field to actually try to do something here.
Absolutely.
So then kind of in conclusion, you know, we talked about kind of the growth of what you've been able to put together, and it's incredible, you know, how you've navigated kind of all these challenges and have built kind of a pretty amazing brand down there in Florida. And hopefully, you know, plans to expand even further in the future. You know, you talked about, you know, wanting those guys that just, you know, that will do it for free just because they love sports and stuff. What advice do you give those guys who are just starting out that are listening to this or listening to some of your own podcasts and saying like, and I love sport. Like, I wasn't a journalist, you know, and I didn't go, you know, sports broadcasting, but Dan, do I love talking sports all day, every day with my buddies? And I would love to sit down and just kind of get some thoughts out on the podcast. What are some of your thoughts or your advice for starting out and kind of getting that process rolling and kind of building something?
Well, it's a really good question because it's totally changed. I mean, the old way was kind of the way I did it, which is you go to grad school, you get out, you apply for internships, you start covering high school games until, you know, they notice you have a little talent, and then they start to move you up the chain, right? Cover bigger, bigger teams, and then eventually, you know, you want to become a columnist, and that's what you do. None of that applies anymore. those jobs don't exist. You know, nobody's adding to their staffs. So the advice I give, you know, the young guys in my network is just be versatile and available. That's it. Like, you cannot learn one platform. Like, just being a writer is not enough. Like, I never went to school for radio or TV, and I was hosting after – I was the guy who replaced Dan Le Batard on 790 The Ticket, okay? That was simply because I'd done a lot of radio appearances for my newspaper work covering the Heat and the Dolphins. You know, but I kind of learned it on the fly. You know, I learned TV on the fly. I mean, you have to be versatile. And I think the other thing is you have to be present. And by that, I mean, like, you have to be active on social media and you have to try to look at things a different way. Anybody can just spout an opinion, you know, but the guys that I really value in my network are the ones who, I mean, on draft night, like, we had guys like telling me about the Dolphins' fifth round pick because they had watched the film on him. Like, that's the newspaper guys are not doing that. And that's not to disparage them, but they're dealing with a boss above them who's telling them they got to hit a certain deadline. It's just different, you know? And so you have a real advantage if you don't work for one of those places, because you can basically create the content you want on your own. And so what I would just say is, you know, be versatile, learn how to write, learn how to do TV, learn how to produce. That's a really valuable skill. Okay. The kid who, Alex Toledo's 23 now, he's a Lyft driver who's attending FIU. Okay. Basically he came to me from another podcast. I got him credentialed to Summer League in Vegas. We had dinner. I said, look, I want you to produce the pod I'm going to do. He learned how to produce. I started putting him on air, and now he's asking the best questions of Eric Spoelstra in press conferences. He's 23. It's not about, you know, kind of credentials and resumes and which school you went to anymore. It's just about hunger and versatility, learning those skills, you know, figuring out how to do all of them. I do some better than I do others. I was a writer. I mean, that was what I did. Writing became really hard for me after it wasn't for 20 years. And so now I would, you know, I'm doing all this other stuff, but now I've had to learn other skills. I you know, it's not just content creation, but I'm trying to sell ads. I'm doing merchandise. I'm doing accounting. I'm doing planning. I'm hosting Zoom meetings. I mean, I'm, you know, all this stuff that I don't know anything about, you know? So it's just, that's what I say. Be open, be versatile, be available. I think if you're those three things, I think somebody will give you a look, and be creative.
Yeah, that's incredible. Great advice for sure. Thank you.
So real quick, sure. We've kind of moved from what you're telling me. We've kind of moved, I would say several years back, guys that I knew that went to college for IT and would drop out and just go get the jobs because it wasn't so much your degree as much as what you learned and could pick up from, you know, being up too late, you know, go back to the Matrix Neo style,
right,
sitting in
right.
your back room on a computer. Is this what you're kind of seeing more out of writers at this point, younger guys that just have a passion they're bringing in. Do you want to elaborate a little bit more? Because you said this one guy now asks the best questions. Like, what have you done to help develop him? Where did that kind of transition to after finding him?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he asked the best questions because I think he comes at it from a different perspective. I didn't really have to do a lot with him except get him to not be nervous. you know, I mean, because you're going to have that. Like, for me, it's like, all right, I mean, you know, I mean, I interviewed LeBron alone like 30 times, you know, Dwayne probably 200 times. Like, so for me, it's like, whatever, they're Dwayne, they're LeBron. I mean, you know, Dwayne and I talked about our personal lives. Like, it's not, for me, it's not, but I remember what it was like when I was 22. It was a little different. You know, the first time I interviewed Marino, I was scared to death. You know, I remember being in a lock. Now I'm, you know, now Dan and I are good, but like that, you know, I remember being in a locker room with, you know, in Washington, when I was traveling with the Heat in the late 90s, and I was trying to talk to Mitch Richmond, who was there at the time. And all of a sudden I heard this booming voice behind me say, "Can I have a minute with Mitch?" And I turn around, it's just me and Mitch in the locker room. I turn around and it's MJ. And I was like, "Oh yeah. Okay, sure. Yeah, whatever. You can have a minute." And you know, so it's just kind of getting over that. I think once you do that, you're fine. So with him, I really didn't do much. I mean, I just told him, you know, the game, like, I don't want to disparage anybody, but a lot of the writers, the older writers, they don't really know the game. They cover thousands of games, but they don't really study it. You know, they're just out there to try to get some quotes to fill it up. You know, before it was all about hitting a print deadline. It wasn't about, you know, studying on their own time. Now, like, everybody can access the stat site on NBA.com and get analytics, right? Everybody, you know, people have, you know, they've got subscriptions to Synergy Sports so that they can break down plays. Like, you know, and the reality is, like I said, they have the time to do it. So this kid just knows bad. He knows ball. Like, he's 23. He gets what a high pick and roll should lead to. I mean, he understands the game. And I just think, like, a lot of writers, again, not to disparage, but a lot of writers, it's just about the deadline and getting to the next city. It's not really studying, you know, the game. And so, and I think that fans now are more educated because they can do a lot of this stuff on their own, and they want somebody who's going to actually speak their language. And I just noticed that much more education about sports. When the Big Three came together, you know, the Heat Index was – ESPN sent the Heat Index down here. So they sent four writers down here, all right, one of which was here already. Brian Windhorst, Mike Wallace, Tom Haberstroh, and Kevin Arnovitz. And basically, those four writers represented four different things, the ways you need to cover a beat. Windhorst was like the personnel guy, okay? I mean, everybody said he was the LeBron guy. At the time, he was. I'm friends with Brian. But, like, he was a personnel guy. He was the guy who was calling GMs and all the rest of it. That's a big part of beats. The second, Mike Wallace was the personality guy. He was the guy who got to know the athletes and wrote their personal stories. You need that too. Kevin Arnovitz was the strategy guy. Tom Haberstroh was the stats guy. Personnel, personality, stats, strategy. They had all four of those guys. That was the Heat Index. I don't think they did that on purpose, but that's what they did. I was covering the Big Three alone. I had to do all four. So I know what I was up against, but I know how a beat should be done. And I just think it's really tough to do it these days when you're always afraid of being fired. And that's kind of what it is in newspapers right now. And so I think what I'm trying to create is a platform where I'm not paying anybody's salary, but nobody's getting fired. And whatever you want to contribute, you contribute. We try to make money together. And I think that's the only way to do this.
So real quick then is, you know, one of the things I think would be a difference between what you have versus these older systems with newspapers, open media, et cetera. You don't have deadlines to work with, I'm assuming.
No. And that started to go away anyway. You know, when I moved to Bleacher Report from newspapers, I didn't have a deadline, and I actually found myself sometimes taking forever because I'd be the last guy in the locker room, you know, and there's a real big advantage to that. You get the stuff nobody else gets as the newspaper writers left. But then some, you know, I was leaving Quicken Loans Arena at 5 a.m. a lot. Ooh. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, walking home in a blizzard to my hotel because you just stay all night. You gather everything you possibly can. So, but I don't have deadlines. I do think speed matters. You know, people want stuff quickly because they forget about what was on Twitter 10 minutes earlier. Mm-hmm. So I do think that speed matters. But as far as, I mean, look, when Ray Allen, I was working in 2013, I was still at the Palm Beach Post. My last year in newspaper. Well, I went back for 1 year at the Herald, but 2013. I wrote, the Heat lost to the Spurs, basically. Okay. I had to file a column by the gun, which was common. I had to write my column by the gun. So I wrote the Heat lost, the finals, the Spurs, 2013. And then Ray Allen, the column was done. It was ready to go. Boom. Ray Allen hit the shot. And I was like, oh, bleep. and I had to rewrite in 12 minutes, 700 words. That's what you're dealing with under that pressure. It's actually, it's one of my favorite things I ever wrote, because I didn't think, I just wrote. But that's what you're dealing with as a newspaper writer. It's very hard to compete that way. It's just, and so until newspapers get rid of the print edition altogether, which is happening pretty soon, they're just at a huge disadvantage. They're at a huge disadvantage because they're writing for like 12 people. So who still get their newspapers at their doors, and it's tough, and it's a dying business model. And they also made the huge mistake newspapers did for years of giving away the internet for free. It's very hard once people start to get it for free to then say, hey, give me $4 a month.
Yeah.
It's tough. And so it's just, that's kind of where they're at. Unless you're really providing specialized content like The Athletic, nobody's buying that. And so I think they're, and I don't like to say, because I worked for newspapers 20 plus years, but they're in a really bad place.
Yeah, I got to say, the last time I picked up a newspaper is probably at my grandparents' house. Now I just check on my phone, check on my laptop, and I got my news right there.
So, what are you talking about? My baby boomer father calls me the other day when we're trying to get him to shelter in place and says, hey, a friend of mine told me you can get the $4 Sunday edition for $1 at the dollar store. I said, yeah, I'll pick it up for you. Nope, already got it. You're killing me.
Thanks, Dad. All right, Ethan. Well, we really appreciate you taking the time to come on with us tonight. I'm excited just listening to you. We wish you the best with Five Reasons Sports and continued growth dominating Florida.
Thank you very much. So, appreciate being on with you guys.
Thank you. All right, well, again, I just want to thank Ethan for coming on with us tonight. Really appreciate that. So let's go ahead, drop the checkered flag. Final thoughts for tonight. Matt, what's on your mind?
In all honesty, I think talking to Ethan was really encouraging, because for people out there that have an interest or a passion really for doing something, I mean, in our case, we're talking sports, but if you have a passion for something, between talking to somebody like him, Aver, when we did that, I'm really excited to see what the world kind of comes to after we get past this virus out there right now, because there's a lot of changes going on, and he really gets me excited that you can kind of follow your passion in a different way as things begin to evolve. But as we look forward to this week, now the draft over, we're back to, okay, what could possibly happen in sports other than some esports. And funny thing was, I picked up a box of, I think, Cheez-Its the other day, and it was like, for an Overwatch game here, do you want a signed professional card? And I'm going back to like when we used to have gum packs, or you'd get gum and a pack of cards, from a Topps card. So anyway, just an interesting thoughts for tonight. Not a lot this week. Everybody's still locked in. So.
All right, John.
Oh man. Just hanging in there. Yeah. Life's been throwing all kinds of craziness at us, but just hanging in, thankfully we do still have the esports on the sim side, which we talked about a couple weeks ago. We had, Scott on from NASCAR, and it's been awesome to see, the e-racing side of things is still continuing and flourishing. So at least that's giving, those of us that like racing a platform to have some Saturday and Sunday enjoyment. So I've got a few things lined up with that. iRacing sends out a schedule every week of their broadcast. So they got like World Outlaws, IndyCar, NASCAR, some F1 stuff. So yeah, I'm trying to stay busy on the e-racing side just to keep my sanity.
Yeah, sanity is definitely good, as this is now like week 6, 7, something like that. Kind of lost track of days of how long we've actually been stuck inside. Yeah, kind of on the same thing. Was exciting. It was encouraging talking to Ethan tonight just about the future of I want to call it journalism, just creation content for whatever topic you're interested in and how it's going to go. So that was really fun talking with him. But yeah, kind of with esports, probably get on some of that as well this week between work. Kind of that busy time of year right before graduation starts, but that's all right. So, well, guys, it's been fun. We're going to go ahead and close out the episode and hope you each have a good week.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you'd like to have your sports-related question or comment featured on the show, please email us at sportstalkgarage@gmail.com. Also, if you want to keep up to date with us outside of the show, please follow us on Twitter at sportsgaragepod. If you enjoyed the show, please drop us a 5-star review and subscribe if you want to hear more. So for Chris back in the studio, David and Matt, I'm John, and we are the Sports Talk Garage.